Welcome to the Men's Health Week podcast series. I'm Mark Sainsbury. Men's Health Week is an awareness campaign. We're not after your money, just your attention. And in 2022, it's about small steps. And you've already taken one just by joining us. This series is about the areas us guys are a bit crap at dealing with. But the good news is, by taking small steps, making small changes, we can turn things around. We're not about giving sermons or lectures, but we reckon our guests have something to offer you in the areas that impact on us the most. In this episode, one area of men's health many of us find the most difficult to deal with, the prostate. More people die with prostate cancer than from it, but for many men, it's still a no-go area. Urologist Rod Studd specialises in the prostate, and he wants to change our attitudes and ease our fears. And in case you wondered what a urologist actually was, Rod had a very down-to-earth explanation. Look, for a start, what's a urologist, Rod?
Basically a plumber, a surgeon who operates on the urinary tract. So from the kidneys to the bladder, prostate, urethra, testicles, we cover that territory.
And it's also a territory that men are a bit funny about talking about, let alone going to see a doctor about.
Oh, sure, they are, yeah. It's not something you talk to your mates about, although, you know, when you start to have friends that have health issues in their 50s and 60s, it's often around prostate, and that's when they start talking. But up until then, that sort of subject is off limits for a lot of guys.
Yet women will talk a lot more freely about their own bodies and what's going on and seeking help.
Oh, they will. And they'll often, you know, the wives will talk about it, about their husband's prostates and PSAs, but the guys, you know, a lot of them don't like to, don't want to. So that's one of the barriers to improving prostate cancer outcomes.
How can you fix that?
Well, I think we need to talk about it, normalise it, and encourage men to engage with their GP. And, you know, women do that from an early age with their reproductive health, regular attendance at the GP for smears and that sort of thing. Whereas for men, a lot of them don't have a reason to see their doctor. So it's not part of their habit. And they cruise through life until they collide with something, and it's often, it could be a prostate issue, PSA level that's up, and then it's a bit of a shock to some of them.
So men need to, I think one of your ideas was men should give birth. That would change their attitudes.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think so.
How does that work?
Well, I think that's, you know, at about 25, if we had a baby, I think it would clear the air. It would get rid of the anxiety around seeing a doctor and having procedures, because I think that a lot of that anxiety keeps people away.
So this territory, this plumbing territory that you specialise in, you're particularly, I mean, you cover everything, but the prostate cancer is something you are particularly skilled and specialise in. What is the prostate?
So the prostate is a mandarin-sized gland that sits between the bladder and the penis. It's part of the pipe we pee through, and its main job is to make seminal fluid, the fluid that nourishes the sperm. Yeah, and as we get older, it gets bigger, and prostate cancer can develop.
I mean, is it odd that it's a very common form of cancer, isn't it? I mean, prostate cancer.
Oh, very much so. It's really part of ageing to a large degree. If you look at studies that have looked at the prostates of men that have died of other causes, by the time you're in your 70s, about two-thirds of men will have histologic evidence of prostate cancer, yet most of them would not know that and wouldn't necessarily ever have any issues with it.
Will all men get prostate cancer?
If you live long enough, you're likely to. That's right. But not cancer that would necessarily threaten your health or well-being.
And is it something, I mean, can you say, you know, you're more predisposed to it? Is there a genetic or, you know, particular communities that are more susceptible or more prone to developing prostate cancer?
There are. There are some genes that are inherited, and the BRCA gene, which is implicated in breast and ovarian cancer also increases the risk of prostate cancer. And there are other genes as well. So men with a family history of prostate cancer, father, brothers, their risk is higher than it would be for the general population. In terms of environmental risk factors, we know that a healthy diet, low fat, plenty of vegetables, regular exercise, and having a healthy weight, they're all important factors in reducing the risk of getting prostate cancer.
So you can take steps to stop it developing or getting as bad as it could be.
That's right. We talk about healthy heart, healthy prostate. It's the same risk factors for cardiovascular disease as there are for prostate cancer.
I wonder whether that, you know, because there's some of those basic messages that we need to do. So when men come and see you, is it too late by the time they see a specialist like you?
Not really. A lot of the men that we see don't turn out to have prostate cancer. And the ones that we tend to diagnose through PSA testing, it's often at a very early stage.
Now, the PSA test, this is the blood test that looks for markers for it, is it?
Correct, yeah. So PSA is a natural enzyme that the prostate makes in all of us. And the job of that enzyme is to liquefy the semen. And we know that as men age, as their prostate grows, that the PSA level rises. But it'll also go up for other reasons. And one of those is prostate cancer.
And if you can identify it, if you can get to it early, can it be dealt with?
It certainly can. So once we make a diagnosis, we like to then look at the tumour parameters and try to put the guy somewhere along the spectrum of low, medium or high risk. And that gives us an understanding of the threat that it might pose to that person. And for many men who have small, slow-growing prostate cancers, it's perfectly reasonable to monitor.
That'll come as a relief to a lot of people, I'd imagine.
Well, it is. I mean, it is a relief to many men. So for low-risk disease, we would have an active surveillance rate of at least 50%.
Now, when you're coming back to detecting this and looking at that, I mean, you talk about the PSA test. The other issue, the big issue for a lot of men, which comes back to their bodies and feeling comfortable, is the digital test, the finger-up-the-bum test.
Yep.
To put it, you know, honestly, why is that so necessary? You'd sort of think in this day and age you must have some magical instrument you can wave over us that does the same thing.
That's true. In terms of utility, I think we could say that the PSA test is more useful than the finger test. And certainly having a PSA test alone would be a reasonable compromise if the digital test was something that the person really objected to. But it does help us with some information, for example, the size of the gland, and some cancers we can feel a nodule. And there are some cancers that don't make much PSA, and the only way that those ones are found typically is through the finger test.
So when should you get tested? At what age should men start thinking about these things?
Well, it depends on your family history. So if there's nobody in your family that's had prostate cancer, 50 would be the typical age. If it runs in the family, brothers or father, then 40 would be the recommendation. So start a bit earlier if there's a family history.
Okay, so that's for testing. In terms of altering your lifestyle to give you the best chance, and you talked about the exercise and the healthy living and the healthy food, does that start at 40 or 50 or does that have to start earlier?
I guess the earlier the better, really, starting at a regular exercise program, healthy diet. You know, hopefully guys are engaging in that from their 20s and 30s and into middle age.
As you said, this is an area quite often surrounded by fear and fear of cancer, fear of, because it's something to do with your bits, you know, and men are remarkably sensitive about that. People must come and see you and they must be a mess. They don't want to talk about it. They need to. How do you relate to these men or get these men to sort of start listening?
Well, I guess a lot of the guys that I see, they've already made the decision that they were going to get, they're more proactive. So there's a silent majority out there, I guess, that I don't meet early enough. But certainly some of them are quite anxious. And by the time they meet me, they've usually had a discussion with their GP about the PSA test, for instance, and the fact that it's up and they need further testing. And the next step would usually be to talk about doing a prostate biopsy or a prostate MRI. And if they have an MRI and there's an abnormality there, the next step would be a biopsy. Sometimes we go straight to biopsy without a scan, although these days it's often an MRI as a first step.
Do you get frustrated? I mean, it must be difficult sometimes. You see a patient comes in and you think, if you'd come and seen me earlier, I could have done something.
Well, that's right. And, you know, for many prostate cancers, we can, if we identify them early, we can intercept them. There are some cancers that we're not that good at testing for and picking up early enough, the very active cancers. So I think you do need a bit of luck in life. If you're unlucky enough to get one of those, they tend to grow rapidly, and screening and testing and treating those cancers, our outcomes aren't as good. But you know, thankfully, they're the minority. Most cancers we can pick up early enough to cure.
Okay, Rod, to men, Kiwi men out there, or men anywhere around the planet listening to this podcast, what bit of advice would you give to them?
The most important part is to look at prostate health as part of your general health. So engage with your GP early and have a habit of seeing your GP on an annual basis, particularly when you're getting up into your 40s and 50, so that they cover off those checks of blood pressure, cholesterol, and, of course, prostate. So I think that's the most important thing, having a good relationship with your primary care doctor.
And there is hope.
Certainly there is, yeah. It's a cancer that we can identify and treat successfully. And in terms of side effects from treatment, you know, that's getting better and better. Most men with localized disease, if they have surgery or radiotherapy, are left with good urinary and sexual function. That's one of the fears, of course, the impact that the treatment might have on particular erections.
That's the common perception, is that it's the end of your sex life.
Well, it is. And, of course, we try to preserve all those important structures, and they're all very, very close to the prostate, the nerves that cause erections, the valve that controls urinary continence. So the treatments certainly do have the potential for disruption of those, but we can often preserve that function pretty well. There often is some impact, but there's certainly a good chance for most men that they'll recover good function.
And the bottom line is, the sooner you see your doctor, the more chance you're giving yourself.
Certainly, absolutely.
Thanks for listening. And remember, those small steps could save your life. You just need to take the first one. And thanks also to our friends at the Master Builders. Without their generous and constant support, Men's Health Week wouldn't be possible.